the more you have those kind of unexpected turns or failures or any of those other things, you start to feel a sense of confidence over like, that's okay. And I think that maybe there's a lot of people that just haven't necessarily had those reassuring experiences yet, or there's so many different kind of societal systems that weigh in on us. It's not surprising that a lot of women feel like they're getting it wrong or like they're not enough. So I think more and more of those conversations where I just started to realize there's a common thread here. And I think that we can accomplish so much more when we don't feel held back by those feelings of doubt or inadequacy.
Hey, it's Adam Schoenfeld. Welcome back to the Built in Seattle podcast, where Seattle's top entrepreneurs, investors, and leaders share their stories and their lessons from behind the scenes. If you like this show, you might also like my personal newsletter. Each week, I share a lesson, a question, or an idea that I've picked up while learning from others. Subscribe at adaminseattle.com. My guest today is Rebecca Bastian. She's the CEO and co-founder at OwnTrail. And I love Rebecca's story because she didn't have some elaborate master plan. She kind of had the unstrategy. She stayed open to possibilities. She took us through her story from 15 years at Zillow, coming in the very early days as employee 20 and then growing to VP of product and later VP of community and culture, how that experience opened the door to writing her book called Blaze Your Own Trail, and finally how the book and her experience telling that story led her to building a company that's helping other women blaze their trails in work and life. I hope you enjoy the conversation. I'm here with the one, the only, Rebecca Bastian. Hey, Rebecca, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm really excited. I got to read your book this week and got me really ready for this conversation.
That's awesome. Thank you for reading it.
I wanted to start by talking a little bit about your experience at Zillow, and then we can talk about the book and OwnTrail and things you're doing now. Because you were super early at Zillow, right? What was your employee number there?
Not exactly sure, but I think it was in the 20s. It was definitely, we were in very stealth startup mode still when I joined. So much so that I didn't entirely know what I was joining. Very under wraps.
Yeah. And now obviously an icon, a huge company, thousands of employees, publicly traded. So a lot happened.
What was it like?
So you said you didn't really know what you were joining. What was the state of Zillow at that time when you came in?
Getting ready to launch the first version still. So I joined in September of 2005 and we launched in February of 2006. So it was just building the first version and it was really exciting. Yeah, early startup days, which I'm now experiencing as a co-founder as well, but it's an exciting time. And we were all just really passionate about what we were building and doing things that were new that hadn't been done before. So it was a blast. I came over there from Microsoft where I was working on Outlook, which is obviously a very legacy product. So to go from something that had been around for a long time in a really big company to that early startup experience was really fun.
What was the energy like there when you walked in on your first day and the first version isn't even in the market, like 20 something people? What did it feel like in the building?
It was exciting. Everyone was just so nice. And my first day there, actually, we had just taken over a new floor in the Wells Fargo building where we were and went into this conference room that kind of felt like it was from Star Trek or something with this big round table in the middle of it. We hadn't decorated the office yet. We'd just taken over that floor and had a company meeting there. And two of my coworkers ended up, you know, still being some of my best friends, Annie Ryan and Amy Botinsky. We all remember kind of meeting each other on that first day and having some bonding moments and stuff. So it was a really fun time.
Yeah. What did you have any sense at that point of what it would become, or belief or conviction? Like it's gone on to be such an incredible company. What was your sense on it at that time?
Yeah. I mean, the co-founders, Rich and Lloyd, were particularly, Rich was really, he had this ability to get us really excited in company meetings, really strong vision. And so I think we did all from the beginning feel like we were doing something revolutionary there.
What did that look like from Rich? Like, what was his style for communicating the vision and getting everybody behind it?
Just that kind of, if you've talked with him, you probably recognize just that kind of like confident and like calm yet excited and full of wonder feeling of what we could be doing. And yeah, I had several friends that asked me if I joined a cult just because I was always like talking about what we were doing. And I just, yeah, he and everyone there really had a way of just making us feel like we were part of something really big and important. And we were. We did end up building some really changing the industry in some really cool ways. So.
Yeah. And so was it 15 years that you were
almost,
there?
Almost, yeah. It was about 14 and a half, yeah.
What are you, when you look back on that, what are you most proud of about that journey? That's a long time. What stands out?
Yeah, a lot of the product stuff. So most of my career there was in product leadership. I started as a PM and then grew into vice president of product. And so a lot of the different things I worked on product-wise were really exciting, and I'm really proud of. You know, particularly, I worked with a few developers on the side actually to start all of our mobile apps, and that was a really big kind of inflection point in how we scaled the business. So that was really cool. But the role I took on my last couple of years there, which was actually something that grew from a lot of side projects I'd been doing for much longer than that, but that was really focused on. It was called Community and Culture. Was the team that I started and led, and it was focused on really creating equitable systems and a sense of belonging internally, and then leveraging that and leveraging the people that felt that strong sense of belonging to create social impact through our products and business decisions. And that was I was very proud of how that turned out, and the team that joined me on that journey, really remarkable team. And a lot of what we were able to accomplish during that time was really cool. And I loved it. I actually definitely didn't set out to start a company or even to leave my role there. I loved what I was doing in my team, but it was that accidental entrepreneurship that pulled me away and felt like the next thing I needed to be doing.
Yeah, that's so cool. Because I looked at that path and you did two things that I think are really rare. One is going from product manager all the way up to VP in a growing company. And the other is then you've moved to a completely different function. Mm-hmm. What was the conversation like when you transitioned from, you know, being VP of product to going to this other new function and initiative?
So first, because like I mentioned, I've been doing a lot of this work on the side for a while, and I just had that aha moment pretty quickly where I realized like, yeah, when all my friends ask me what's new at work, I'm talking about my side projects. Like that's really where I'm excited. And I was reporting to David Beitel, our CTO at the time. And so I kind of mentioned to him one day, probably the day after I realized this, that I feel like this is where my passion really lies and this is what I'd like to be working on. And he was super supportive, and he had me start with talking with Dan Spalding, the chief people officer, who then I ended up ultimately reporting to. And Dan got excited about the vision. And so then it ended up being a series of conversations with Amy and Spencer and different leadership, just forming that vision of what this team could look like. And at the time, I was leading the teams that were doing all the product work for all of our monetization. So I had to make the argument that we need this organization and this work within the company, and things won't fall apart. The ROI of having me in this new space will be greater than where I was. And it was true, because I had really incredible leaders reporting to me at that point, and nothing fell apart with me moving over, which is the thing that leaders need to aspire to, is making yourself obsolete in a job because everyone and everything's functioning well within your department. So then once I got everyone excited about that vision, then I freaked out. And it's interesting because, you know, you hold these identities and you don't realize you're holding them sometimes. And so I suddenly had this, and it coincided with, I got in the yes, and then I was speaking at a conference that was all for like product leaders and stuff. And everyone's, oh, that's so cool. You're VP of product at Zillow and everything. And all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, I'm a woman in product. I'm a product person. What am I doing? Like moving over to essentially the HR department. And I even went so far as sending an email saying, you know what? I think this is the wrong decision. I should be in product. And they were like, okay, let's talk about it on Monday. It was a scary leap. Growing from PM to VP, that's cool. But it's a more linear feeling. And there's like these rungs of a ladder that you're stepping up. And this was definitely more of the jungle gym move. And it was scary. But what ended up happening is I just did it. I made the leap. And it turned out really quickly that it's still me. I still have all the skills and experiences that I always had, and I'm doing this new role now. And really, like, a lot of my product leadership background came in really handy in the people space as well. Yeah. And I think honestly, going through a leap like that internally, and almost the entrepreneurship of starting new initiatives within a company, gave me some of the confidence to take the leap of starting my own company as well.
What was the self-talk that got you back on the track after sending the email and almost backing out from making that?
Part of it was I made the argument that part of what I should be doing in this new team involves product. And so I was able to get some headcount for a PM and then a developer and stuff, and like actually doing social impact products as part of this. So then it made me feel like I think that was really strategic, because decoupling kind of some of the equity and belonging work from the business and product work, like, it's a missed opportunity. So I think that was really good. But also it made me, I was still holding on to some piece of that. But also I have a very supportive group of friends, both within Zillow and outside of there, that I think I got some of the pep talks I needed and some of the courage I needed.
I love that. Why was it called equity and belonging? Like, maybe I'm being pedantic here, but was this sort of early incarnation of diversity, equity, and inclusion as kind of people are talking about a lot more now? And yeah, how early were you in that movement and as you started to build this whole new function inside Zillow?
Yeah, so this was 2017, I think, that I started that team. So not overly new. It certainly was before the kind of 2020 wave of paying attention. But D&I was already like enough of a phrase that people were starting to mute it out. Like it was starting to sound more cliche. So part of it is naming in a way that makes people think more about what the function really is. But also, I think equity and belonging are really for everyone. Like, equitable systems mean that, you know, everyone's starting from a different place and has different needs in their careers and in their lives, and recognizing that and then giving them what they need to be successful. And belonging, likewise, I think that it's kind of inclusion. I like the analogy that I've heard, which is diversity is being invited to the party and inclusion is being asked to dance. And then belonging is dancing, no one's looking. And you really need to get to that belonging state of feeling so comfortable to share your ideas, share your dance moves metaphorically, that because otherwise you can have people that are hired into a company and even included at the table, but if they don't feel comfortable to speak up and share opposing viewpoints or really contribute their perspectives, you're not going to reap the benefits of that. And so belonging is so important in that sense. Yeah, so we went pretty deep on thinking through why those were the right kind of ideas to be capturing and working towards as a company.
You mentioned some of that in your book too, about people being comfortable speaking up or being their real selves at work. I'm curious, like, how did the book come from this Zillow experience, or what? Like, I know you're big on these paths. I was trying to connect those two dots in your path and think about what caused that.
Right. So the book, Blaze Your Own Trail, is this choose your own adventure style exploration of women's life paths. And I think so I started writing like 6 years ago now. So it was definitely like something that I discovered a little further along in my journey, but then I really loved it. It started with being asked to write a guest blog post on a blog, and then it turned into a Huffington Post byline and then a Forbes byline. And I've just been doing a ton of writing. So I had this idea in my head that it would be cool to write a book, but I didn't feel like I was an expert on anything enough to write an entire nonfiction book on a topic, and I don't feel like I'm much of a fiction writer necessarily, although this book did end up taking on kind of a fictional plot line, which was interesting. But basically, long story short, I woke up in the middle of the night with the idea for it. And this happens to me pretty frequently, where I wake up at like sometime between 3 and 5 a.m. with like big ideas in my head, and then some of them I end up running with. So this was one of those times. And I think it really came from, I've spent my entire life with really strong women friendships, but also I've spent years, as I've been in different kind of leadership and mentorship roles, talking with a lot of women who oftentimes reach out. I say yes to all the coffees. So people will reach out and want to hear about my journey and be asking questions that make it really clear that they feel like there's some right path they're supposed to be on, that there's supposed to be this kind of linear progression. You're supposed to know where you're going and how you're going to get there. And it's not surprising that particularly women feel that way, because when we look around, we see these kind of like picture perfect end results, and it all looks very linear. When you look at like LinkedIn or even like Facebook or different social media, that you don't see the bumps in people's paths, and you don't see all of the kind of missteps or failures or like random chances that we took. And so I've spent a lot of time trying to just say, relax, it's okay. There is no one right path. You don't need to know where you're going. Stay open to possibilities. And so I think the idea for this book really was trying to be this kind of experiential view into that idea. And so you, the reader, it's told in the second person, and you're going through this kind of fictional plot line, but you make a decision at the end of each chapter, which tells you where to go next. And so through that, and then through a lot of data that's woven into the book as well, it's really trying to embrace the idea that there is no one right path. And through this data, really create solidarity around a lot of the experiences that we go through as women that don't get talked about as much. And so they can feel really isolating. But in reality, they're actually quite shared experiences, right? They're just more taboo. And so we feel alone in them. And so that was really the goal of the book. It wasn't, I wouldn't say it stemmed from my work at Zillow necessarily, although, of course, all of the different relationships and observations and conversations I'd had throughout that led to it. And then I just wrote it on the side, and it definitely wasn't, I didn't have an end goal of having it kind of morph into a company or anything, but.
Okay. I was wondering if there was a master plan to, like, a lot of category creators write the book and then launch the SaaS company, but that wasn't.
No,
it was organic.
Living by my message of just taking it as it comes and staying open to possibilities.
Yeah, staying open. Yeah. Like doing things that create option value for you, but not prescribing a rigid path. Yeah. Going to what you were saying about how you wove the data into the story, and then you had this beautiful form of the Choose Your Own Adventure, which if you're like me and you read those as a kid, it was like, oh, it's this. I was looking, like, you had this one on imposter syndrome in one of the chapters, and you said, it's a feeling of psychological discomfort brought on by difficulty in acknowledging one's own success, which an estimated 70% of the US population has experienced at one point. And there's a lot of little things like that in the book where you, like, draw data into the story that kind of normalizes these things for people. And I read that just for listeners as an example. So I'm curious, like, when you put it together, did you have the data first or the narrative first or the form first? Or how did you think about those things, and how did it come together into this shape that it is?
Yeah, it was actually a fascinating process, which is a funny way to describe something that you're doing yourself. But I was fascinated by what was coming out of my head during this process. So it started with, I started by thinking of the format. And what I did is I created this whole decision tree of what I thought the kind of chapter outline would be. And then when I started writing, like, this story came out of me that I wasn't predicting, really. And it completely changed. Like, the final decision tree, which you can see in the beginning of the book, was 100% different than the one that I drew up at first. And I was, like, literally, like, surprised by different plot twists and stuff. So it was, I think this must be, like, what different, when artists talk about having a muse or some kind of, like, inspiration that comes to them. It was a really interesting experience. I do a lot of other art forms too, and have some of those experiences with that, but I had never really had that entirely with writing. So yeah, it was first the outline, then the story unfolded, which ended up changing the outline completely. And then I would go back with each chapter. Like, I'd put placeholders for myself of find a data point about this experience. And then I'd go back, and it was definitely like write late at night and edit during the day, or find data points during the day. Most of, like, the initial draft I actually wrote on my phone while putting my younger kid to sleep at night.
Oh, yeah.
Because
wow.
He was five at the time, and he was going through this phase where he just wouldn't fall asleep unless I was sitting in a corner of his room. And so I would just sit there in this chair in his room, and instead of scrolling through social media, I'd just be writing a chapter at a time. And I had this app that would sync between my phone and my computer, and I'd set little goals for myself about word count and stuff. And I just wrote it that way.
Wow, how fun. What a cool way to actually produce it too. Do you think that environment, like, you talked about you went off the outline and it organically took these different shapes. Do you think being just in that environment on your phone, like in your kid's room, had something to do with that? Because that's so different than what I would think of as, like, the environment of, like, okay, I'm going to sit down and do some serious writing.
Yeah, I definitely didn't have the opportunity to sit in a mountain retreat with a bottle of whiskey and a typewriter or anything, which I think is somehow like the what I envision writers doing.
But like in a cafe in Paris or something. It's not that. Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? I've been paying attention to this more lately, actually, is like the different times of day and the types of thinking that I do during those different times. And I think I do a lot more kind of like creative flowy stuff late at night or first thing in the morning. And then like midday ends up being like a good time for more mindless tasks and stuff. So yeah, it's hard to say. It's the only book I've written. So I don't have anything to compare it to, but yeah.
Are any things about that experience changing the way you work now that you're back into building a business?
I'm definitely trying to time box my day in ways where I'm going to find the most productivity and enjoyment from the different tasks I'm doing. But then there's lots of variables too. Like we have a distributed team now across different time zones and actually investors across even more time zones worldwide. So there's a lot of variables in how my day is structured these days.
So going back to what you were saying about this theme about staying open to possibilities and, you know, recognizing that there's always bumps in the road. We don't all have this linear path. When did you get passionate about, you know, helping people navigate their own path?
I think it was as I was having more and more women reach out to me with these feelings of uncertainty about their own paths. Because, you know, I've had a pretty winding path. I can definitely tell the story that makes it look linear and intentional, but that's not really how it ever felt in the moment. And most of the really big decisions I've made weren't like all that strategic, right? Moving to Seattle the first time was for a boyfriend, and then moving back to Seattle after I went to grad school down in Berkeley, also for a different boyfriend. That one I ended up marrying. But and then I went to Zillow because I hated the commute to Microsoft. So it wasn't an overly strategic decision either. I failed out of college the first time. And I've definitely had my fair share of screw ups. And I think like the more you have those kind of unexpected turns or failures or any of those other things, the more you see people you're close to having those, you start to feel a sense of confidence over that's okay. And I think that maybe there's a lot of people that just haven't necessarily had those reassuring experiences yet, or there's so many different kind of societal systems that weigh in on us, everything from familial input to patriarchal input and different kind of workplace dynamics and all of that, where it's not surprising that a lot of women feel like they're getting it wrong or like they're not enough. Or so I think more and more of those conversations where I just started to realize there's a common thread here. And I think that we can accomplish so much more when we don't feel held back by those feelings of doubt or inadequacy. And so I think that was just a message that I've been wanting to share as much as possible.
Are you, at the end of the day, an optimist? All the endings had a happily ever after version. They all went through their bumps, as we all do, whether the bumps were financial or relationship or family or something else.
Yeah, but all of the happily ever afters were like almost like tongue-in-cheek happily ever after, because none of them were like yeah, fairy tale endings. Yes, to answer your question, I think I am a total optimist. And I'm sure you, having talked to a lot of different founders, there's probably a trend there where you need to be in order to build a company. But also it's really like happily ever after, because you can find your happy. You can be okay no matter what kind of, there's like happily ever after sharing custody with your kids and happily ever after mourning your mother who passed away or happily ever. So it's not like they're perfect. I don't know if you're familiar with this like cognitive behavioral therapy technique where you think through the worst possible scenario and then realize that you can still be okay at the end of that. And it was a play on that, right? No, your goal shouldn't be to avoid all pain and all difficulty and all failure, but the goal is to be strong enough to make it through those things and find your place throughout it all. And of course, the endings are all around. She starts as the protagonist, who is you, the reader, starts as she's exiting college. And then all the endings are in her mid-40s. So they're also not endings at all. Like she's still going. And so it's there isn't really an ending until you're gone, right?
Is there going to be another version of the book to go from mid-40s forward? Or I'm guessing you didn't come in with a master plan on that.
I don't have a master plan.
Have you thought about that?
I've definitely been asked that. I think if I were to do another version of the book, I think it'd be really interesting to explore different identities as well. So not just age-based, but I also think what's happened with Own Trail, which we can talk more about, the company that spun out of this, is I have purview into a whole lot of real women's life paths now. And I almost feel like if Blaze Your Own Trail was a hypothetical outline for what this could be, like we actually have like real stories and data now. So I don't know. I'm pretty busy right now with building a company. So I'm not writing a book right now, but we'll see. I definitely like my editor and my publisher were phenomenal. So I'd love to work with them again and definitely keep writing.
It definitely had me wondering if there was another version, but it was perfect for me because it ended in my current phase of life. So that was fun. Yeah, let's talk about the idea for Own Trail and how it happened. Was it another lightning bolt in the middle of the night thing that came to you? Or how did you end up like deciding that you were going to start a company?
Yeah, there were some lightning bolts and there was some gradual uncovering of ideas. But basically, it started with, I'd signed with my publisher, and there's going to be this year between that and when the book came out, and I'm not the most patient person. So I started taking that time to think about, oh, what would be a really cool book launch platform? Like the traditional approach being, you have an author website, and it talks about you're the author, and this is the book you wrote. But I was like, oh, it'd be really cool to have something be a little more interactive, where the book has 19 different endings and a bunch of different paths, but it's obviously a finite subset of the infinite different paths that women take through their lives. And so I was like, oh, it'd be really cool as like a way of promoting the book if women could share what some of the trails they've blazed are, which pretty quickly then ended. I was in this interesting state where it's, do you ever have that feeling? It's almost like you need to sneeze or something, but I had this like idea on the tip of my brain and I'm like putting the pieces together and it wasn't quite coming together, but I'm like, I know there's a thing there. And so I'd been mulling it over for a while and talking with different people. And I'm like, I feel like it's something bigger than just that. And it was actually really funny because I was in a meeting with a guy that I worked with who would grab some time with me because he was like, oh yeah, it's interesting because I want to be able, like a bunch of people asked me how I got into program management or whatever. And it was like, I started thinking, I'm like, oh yeah, being able to see all the paths to a given point or whatever. So I freaked out on this poor guy in the meeting. I was like, oh my God, this is it. This is the thing. So I wrapped up the meeting and I called my husband. I'm like, I think I have the idea that I've been stuck on. And then it just all came pretty quickly from there. And I reached out. So first I reached out to Carolyn Dunn, who's our VP of engineering, and she's an old friend of mine as well. We used to commute to Microsoft together, actually. And she had said to me when we had gone to the Moisture Festival earlier that year together, and she knew my book was coming out. She's like, oh, if you ever want me to make you a book website, I'm happy to do that. She's a developer. So I called her up. I'm like, that book website? I think I actually have a bigger idea than that. So I pulled her in, and then I reached out to, I don't know if Rebecca Lovell, she's obviously a big part of the Seattle startup scene and also a friend of mine. I was, I have this idea and I think it might be a company and I don't know anything about starting companies. What do I do? And so she was actually our first advisor and she joined to help me navigate that. And then shortly afterwards is when I met my co-founder, Katie. And so I didn't even know her before, but we met at an event at the Riveter that I had popped into to talk with someone there. And we just totally hit it off. And she asked me out on a friend date because she hadn't been in Seattle for that long. And she was like, you seem like someone that I want to be friends with. You want to get coffee sometime? Which was really cool that she did that. And so I started telling her kind of what I was thinking about with Own Trail, and she just totally got it. And she comes from this really like brand and marketing kind of background that was exactly the complement to my background with product and engineering kind of stuff. And so I asked her if she would be interested in joining as an advisor with the potential of being my co-founder, just so we could see how we work together. And yeah, we ended up just making magic together. And so she decided, so basically Katie and Carolyn and I all ended up quitting our jobs that we really loved to do this full time.
There's so much just good serendipity in that story. How have you been intentional about being open to that, or like creating the right environment so that serendipity happens? Because it's an like an incredible string of things that have happened to lead you to where you are. So I'm curious if there's any principles or secrets behind how you do that.
Yeah. So one of the things is just, I think I'm pretty into the side hustle as a way of getting things started, which I had done internally a few times at Zillow, but then like, I didn't set out to start a company. And even when I had this idea for this being something bigger, like for a while in my head, I'm like, this is something I'll just do on the side and see if it takes off. And so then it's a little less scary to start something when you're not like diving full into it immediately. And then the middle of the night lightning bolts there, or it's actually a middle of vacation lightning bolt, was that it's going to be the self-fulfilling prophecy in terms of if Own Trail succeeds, it has a much higher likelihood of success if we go into this full time and go all in versus keeping it going on the side to see what happens. But by the time I realized that, we were already a little further down the path and so had some validation and some big ideas. And then it was a little bit more, stars were a little bit more aligned to make that leap. And so I think with all of those big leaps I've done, it was never like, I'm going to dive in and see if I like this. It was like, I've already been doing this for a while. And I know that at the point that I decided to leave Zillow, I was like, I can't not do this. Everything I've learned and done up until this point has led to this, and this is what I need to be doing. And it was funny because I had been really open about working on Own Trail because I wasn't trying to like sneak around and build a company. I was like, this is a really cool project I'm working on and I've been telling people about it. And so when I did go in to give my notice, my manager was like, oh yeah, saw that coming. I was like, oh really? Mm. He's like, it was just a question of when. So he might have known before me.
So for people who are hearing that and they're like, oh, that makes sense. I don't have to take this huge leap. Like I can kind of, I can do the side hustle or I can take a small bite. What's a good way to start down that path? What cues are you looking for? The thing that's worth doing the side hustle? And how do you even balance that when you have a full-time job and kids and crazy life?
Yeah, the first part of your question is a little easier to answer, I feel like. So like I've derived this framework that I recommend to people that, which was just becoming aware of the way I was thinking about this, but it's basically like triangulating three different questions. So the first one being, what are you passionate about? What do you love doing? And so that's just paying attention to when do you feel the most energized or happy when you're thinking about or working on something. And then the second piece is, what skills do you have? And so I think it's not necessarily like degrees or job titles, but really what are you really good at doing in terms of maybe you're really good at crunching data, or really, maybe you're really good at like bringing people together, or maybe you're really good at creative problem solving or things like that. But looking at those. And then the third piece is really where you're needed, right? So where's their opportunity? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, particularly earlier in our career, sometimes that's as easy as like applying to a job that has a job posting or raising your hand for an opportunity or something. But the real cool stuff happens when it's not necessarily predefined where you're needed, but you're able to recognize where you could be solving problems or contributing or doing something new. And so, yeah, I think that kind of triangulation of passion, skill, and opportunity is really a good framework for what could happen. Because, you know, obviously I'm sitting here saying there's no one right path, which means there's endless possibilities, but how do you narrow those down and choose a direction to go? And I think that's a helpful way for me of looking at it. And then you asked about the balance. That one's harder. Like this spring, my co-founder and I were talking about, we've almost blacked out this past last spring because we both, like I ended up essentially telling Zillow I was leaving like 4 months before I actually left because I wanted to really ramp off nicely from the team that I'd built and stuff. So there's a time where I was like, full-time working at Zillow, full-time working on OwnTrill. School had shut down, so I have my two kids at home. And it was so intense and exhausting, plus just the underlying fear of everything that's going on and the emotions with that. So we were like, yeah, I literally can't even remember. It was like such survival mode that we were going through there. Hopefully that's the worst of the balance piece. But yeah, definitely when you're doing a side hustle, it takes more time. And I think one key is that you can't do it forever, right? Like it needs to be, you know, some kind of finite amount of time. And that could be as easy as saying, I'm going to put a date on my calendar 6 months from now. And if this is really taking off, decide to go all in or something like that. Or in this case, like I had already given my notice. So I knew it was 4 months of doing double jobs at that point. But nothing's free. And if you want the kind of on-ramp into something new and the security of both proving to yourself that you can do this and proving to others and sussing out an idea, it's going to take some extra work. And it's just, that's a decision and a priority in and of itself.
That's awesome. I love that framework. That's super helpful. You've raised some money for this now, and just what got investors excited about this? What's the opportunity to put a dent in the world or change the market from like the business point of view on this?
Yeah, just for your listeners, just to describe what OwnTrill is, first of all, because I described how it formed. But ultimately, OwnTrill is a peer-to-peer support system for women. And the foundation of that is women sharing their trails, which are these really authentic, nonlinear life paths that span our personal and professional lives, and that span both where we've been and where we aspire to go. And it's this kind of series of interconnected milestones. So the milestones aren't necessarily all of the wins or all of the like the things you would see on LinkedIn or on social media, but it's the experiences and the events in our lives that have really made us who we are. And it's the failures and it's the really hard things too. Some of the most common categories are mental and emotional health and issues with jobs and relationship issues and also the wins. It's like the real culmination of our lives. And so with that as a foundation, we're creating this community of women that are really lifting themselves and each other up and connecting in really deep, authentic ways and learning from each other. It's solving the problem of needing to see people who look like us in the places we aspire to and wanting solidarity over the things we're going through right now and everything in between. And so it's very mission driven. We're really, our vision for this is providing support for each other on the individual level, but also through that, really being able to change a lot of the systems that have potentially held us back. And one of the big pieces of that is the data that we understand about women's lives and being able to share more of that in aggregate, which then impacts decisions being made about our lives and belief systems being held about us and all of the different systems that stem from that. And so just to give that overview of what Own Trail is, to then answer your question about the fundraising, which is that we are a very mission-driven, value-driven company built by women that centers women's experiences. So that is to say, we're not for everyone. Not everyone got it. And fundraising was actually a lot of work, I think in part because of that. And first-time founders and building a consumer company in Seattle, where it's a very enterprise kind of ecosystem. And there's a lot of things. It took a long time. I talked with a lot of investors. I actually shared on LinkedIn a spreadsheet with the names blurred out, but of the 285 rows in my spreadsheet of people that every level from like people I reached out to that I never heard back from, to people that maybe I had multiple meetings with and never heard back from, to were too early or were not right, to the 20 people that ended up investing in us in our pre-seed round. And the outcome of that whole thing, like it was a huge pain, but it ended up so good in terms of who we have now on our cap table and the people that we found that really believed in us, and we ended up with a really diverse cap table too, which was something that we weren't willing to budge on. If you look at the profiles of investors out there, it's fairly homogenous, but because we really dug deep on who we were reaching out to and talking with, and of course there's a filtering mechanism that happens when you're pitching a really mission-driven company like this, we ended up with 67% women and 48% people of color on our cap table, which is not normal, but we're really happy with. And they're all people that really believe in what we're doing and believe in us and are going to be huge value as we build out this company. So good end of the story, but it was a lot of work to get there.
That's awesome. I'm really excited to see where this goes. And I want to be respectful of your time because I could probably ask you questions about this for 2 hours, but I want to wrap it up with the supersonic six, which is the rapid fire round. Number one, how much coffee do you drink?
Just one cup in the morning and then I switch to tea in the afternoon.
Okay. Number two, what's one other Seattle company that you're following or studying right now?
So I'm an advisor to this company, but love them. Leg Up, founded by Jessica Eggert and Garrett Rogus, and they're really working on the childcare ecosystem and making it really easy for childcare providers and families to connect with each other and make that accessible. And great team, great mission.
Number three, who's one other Seattle person that you're following or learning from right now?
Huge fan of Laura Kleiss. She's the CEO and founder of Intentionalist, and she's just leading with so much heart. And Intentionalist is focused on supporting small local businesses that are with a really diverse set of owners and supporting them. And so she's an inspiration to me in terms of really making an impact and leading with heart.
Number four, what's the one thing that Seattle needs to improve as a startup hub?
I think that there's a lot of people that say they're early stage investors that seem to be relatively risk adverse. There's exceptions to this, of course. I think that to be a startup hub, the early stage is important. And to really support early stage founders, it does require taking more risks and really thinking beyond pattern matching of what has worked before, because there's a lot more that can be successful in Seattle beyond the existing wins, and taking risks on the teams and on the visions of the companies.
Number five, what's one piece of advice you'd give your 20-year-old self?
Along the lines of some of the kind of butterfly effect type things that unfold in the book I wrote, I wouldn't. I think I love where I am right now and everything that's gone wrong or that I've learned along the way. And I feel like if I was a little smarter at age 20, I might not have ended up here at all. So not touching that.
All right. Okay. Number six, what can this community do to help you? Are there any events, causes, job posts, anything you want people to go take a look at or take action on?
Yeah, check out owntrail.com. We're growing completely organically. And for anyone that identifies as a woman that's listening, share your trail. Everyone has a story to tell. And then everyone knows inspiring women. So reach out to them and encourage them to share their trails and check out Owntrail as well.
Perfect. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. It was fun.
Hey, it's Adam again. Quick note before you go.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you're enjoying the show as much as I am enjoying making it. If you do like it, please leave a rating or a review. That would help other people find it in Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. And if you have any feedback, send me an email, adamseattlepodcast@gmail.com. No underscores, no periods, just adamseattlepodcast@gmail.com.